plumber, ma'am.
I don't need a plumber. You're that clever shark, aren't you?
Candy Graham.
Candy Graham, my foot. You get out of here before I call the police. You're the shark and you know it.
Wait, I'm only a dolphin, ma'am.
A dolphin? Well, okay.
Welcome to the New Hampshire Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Graham, managing editor at nhjournal.com. Coming up, a great conversation with one of my favorite pollsters working in America today, David Paleologos at Suffolk University. Does a terrific job, and he's got a new set of numbers for New Hampshire, the show where the race is. He also talks about what he believes is the current state of polling, and I present him the two most powerful ideas in the 2024 presidential election cycle: poop taco versus crap sandwich. All will be revealed, so keep listening to the podcast. A couple of quick things. One is, we have a story about the reaction to the vote in D.C. to remove Speaker McCarthy, the reaction in New Hampshire among Republicans across the spectrum. And one of the things that I noted is the people who were mad about it were really angry. They were not holding punches. There was inappropriate language used by former U.S. Senator Scott Brown. You can see it at nhjournal.com. And so a lot of passion against the, if you want to say the MAGA activists or Matt Gaetz and company, but a lot of anger. The other thing I noticed is very little support. And in the past, what I've heard from Republican activists, people who are on the ground, people who are concerned about Trump being the nominee because of fears that he might lose a general election and strong fears that he might hurt New Hampshire Republicans running in 2024. There's been kind of a resignation, like, oh, here we are. What are we going to do? When you talk about what's going to happen in 2024 and the idea that some more MAGA candidates might enter, say, the race for governor or the first congressional district where Holly Novoletsky and Russell Prescott, two solid candidates, are running right now, and maybe some wild card MAGA candidate might get in. There was this kind of resignation. Well, what are you going to do? This is where the party is. So what can I say? I see that resignation fading. I'm seeing more anger, more determination, more, look, we just can't hand the Republican brand over to these folks. Which is what the fight with Matt Gaetz, was related to. And I wonder if that's going to have an impact. I wonder if there are some MAGA candidates who might get, you can't bully anyone out. It's too easy to get on the ballot in New Hampshire. Running for president, basically, it's $1,000 and you're basically running for president. So it's going to be easy to get on the ballot, but if there's a lot of social pressure, it may have an impact. It may keep people off. I get a sense that the annoyed middle of the party is now becoming the angry, really ready to do something about it middle of the party. And I think that's one of the things that was revealed because, Kevin McCarthy doesn't fit the model of, one of the old line squish Republicans, going back in the day, Bob Michael. I mean, that's way back. But you know what I mean? He's not out of that wing. The Republicans are ready to turn on Republicans. Not to speak ill of the dead, but John McCain. I mean, John McCain never liked the base of the Republican Party, ever. He was never happier than he was when he was punching a conservative Republican in the face. So that's not where McCarthy comes from. He's part of the team. And to see him get treated this way and the intractability of the Gaetz crowd, I wonder if it's not going to have some impact going forward on who primary voters are willing to vote for. I don't know that it'll affect the presidential race because Trump is so dominant. Trump is his own brand. But you wonder if, the candidates who are trying to stay in that slipstream of, I kind of like Matt Gaetz or I'm leaning towards Team Gaetz, whatever, if that's going to have an impact on them in New Hampshire. So an interesting moment from the week. Of course, I also can't let it go by without mentioning how happy Annie Custer are and Chris Pappas are that they were able to join with their unanimous Democratic friends and give Matt Gaetz the win. They saw Matt Gaetz. They said, I like what he's doing. I want more of it. And so they joined the Chaos Caucus and threw the House into chaos for what reason? To embarrass Republicans. Get that totally. But, you know, when you send out an email 2 hours before your vote announcing that you are the adult in the room who is there to stop chaos, and then you vote for chaos and you have nothing else to offer. New Hampshire Journal has contacted Representative Custer Pappas and said, what was the benefit to America, to governance, from your vote to support Matt Gaetz and throw out Kevin McCarthy? How did that help America? You know, it's not like we don't have a stopgap spending plan in place that every single day ticks down to a government shutdown. It's not like the border just hit another monthly record, 260,000 encounters at the southern border, the highest number ever. It's not like there are problems. So if you just want to shut down Congress for a week, because why the hell not? Go right ahead. So like I said, announcing that you're the adult in the room and then saying, and I want to do what Matt Gaetz is doing, there's an issue there. And I wonder if that won't come up in future races. Although it's hard to find a more safe seat in America than Andy Custer in the 2nd Congressional District here in a state that since 2014 has not had a single Republican federal election win. And since 2012, including 2012, has only had one. 16 out of 17. That's the Democrats' record in New Hampshire. So they got to be feeling pretty good about federal races here in the Granite State. One last thing, a shout out to the state of New Hampshire and their new Landshark Tax Shark ad. Have you seen this yet?
Who is it?
It's our pizza.
Pizza? Nobody ordered a pizza.
You're the no-good Massachusetts tax shark that's been swimming around stealing all our lottery winnings. Oh, get out of here.
The Candy Graham.
Candy Graham? Oh, just a minute.
Ah! Yeah, parody of the terrific Saturday Night Live sketch, Landshark. And what I like about it is, in the middle of all the screaming and yelling and internecine warfare and fighting about nothing, this is an ad about a political difference and its consequence. New Hampshire doesn't have an income tax. Massachusetts has an income tax, and they just created this new so-called millionaire's tax. So the tax in Massachusetts has gotten even bigger. And the point of the ad is, hey, look, buy your ticket in New Hampshire. There's no income tax. That's 9% of the money. Or you can just give 9% to the state of Massachusetts by buying it there. Now, Massachusetts doesn't like the ad, and they don't like this topic, which is the public policy you have in Massachusetts has impacts other than the ones you want, in part because New Hampshire doesn't play along. Massachusetts, people have been fleeing Massachusetts the last few years. Having this new income tax isn't going to have a positive impact. People have been coming across the border to do business in New Hampshire for years for obvious reasons. But it's getting bigger. This lottery thing is a perfect example. Hey, why not buy your lottery tickets while you're there? Why not buy your gas while you're here because of the gas tax differential? Hey, why not? Oh, and by the way, and it's also cheaper to do business as a gas station or convenience store in New Hampshire than Massachusetts, which means that you've got the ability to lower prices even more because of the different regulatory climate. And then while you're here, why not buy your smokes? Because Massachusetts has banned certain types of cigarettes and vapes, et cetera. They got the menthol ban. You've probably seen the ads. Coming up on Thursday, October 12th, I'm going to be moderating a conversation at the New Hampshire Institute of Politics with the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association about this idea. You may have seen the ads, Stop the Bans, Keep New Hampshire Free. And the premise is that when you have bans on things, whether it's menthol cigarettes or vapes, or when you have tax policies that create big differentials, you get unintended consequences. And you think what you're going to get is the social good that you want, but instead what you're doing is, for example, you're making it more lucrative for people to sell the product you're trying to ban illegally. So one of the people that's going to be at this panel on October 12th is the former sheriff of New York City and deputy director and chief operating officer at the ATF about what actually happens when you put these bans in place. And so whether it's sending customers to other states or whether it's creating customers for the black market, which, you know, you've seen all the news stories of the organized retail theft, you know, people pouring into stores and grabbing stuff. That's because they've got a black market for it online, on the internet, waiting for them. And you're just putting more products into that pipeline. And so you've really, if you're going to govern, you have to think about the consequences. And one of those consequences may be that New Hampshire makes a hilarious ad telling your citizens, bring your money to us. There's a win for us. That was not the intended consequence of the income tax hike in Massachusetts, but it's what you got. And by the way, if you want more information about the conversation we're having, Stop the Bans, Keep New Hampshire Free, on October 12th, you can go to nhjournal.com. There's an ad there, and it's in the NH Journal newsletter as well. So please welcome to the New Hampshire Journal podcast, my favorite pollster in all of central to eastern Massachusetts, David Paley-Logos of Suffolk University. How you doing, sir?
I am well. How are you doing?
I remember when you were just a little budding pollster and you were doing local stuff, and now you own polling.
I still am.
No, you're the Bigfoot of pollsters. It's amazing. And you have this. First of all, tell us about this new arrangement you have with the Boston Globe and USA Today.
Yeah, it's kind of unprecedented. I mean, I've been polling separately for the Globe and for USA Today because technically they are competitors. Usually you have a newspaper and a TV station or some other entity. No, you don't have two newspapers. And they were both interested in being partners and being partners with each other. So it was like a weird sort of dovetail kind of thing that happened. And it's worked out terrific so far. And we're going to be doing another statewide poll before the primary. And we're also going to be doing some tracking, too. So right after the Iowa caucus.
And we're going to be covering it all at New Hampshire Journal. Absolutely. Absolutely. So great job. So what is it that Republican primary voters in the Granite State need to know about your latest poll?
So we have Nikki Haley kind of on the move in New Hampshire. I was looking at Real Clear today, realclearpolitics.com, mm-hmm. and the last poll had her third. I'm not seeing that here. I mean, what we're seeing is she's strong. And what's unique about the poll is that it's not coming at Donald Trump's expense. Her growth is coming at the expense of other candidates.
Right.
Maybe, you know, less so Ron DeSantis, but now Christie voters are starting to rotate to her, Scott voters and other voters, Pence voters. So she's gaining really not at the expense of the front runner. He's still winning by 30, 49 to 19.
Right.
But it's kind of, and I think what you're seeing in New Hampshire, and I monitored a lot of the initial calls, is that a lot of people like two candidates or three candidates. And for those people, they are rotating to Nikki Haley. And there might be others out there that Nikki Haley could win over as well.
There's a lot of conversation among the kind of people that you and I talk to that the race is over. You got a 30-point lead in New Hampshire, and that's the tightest early state for Trump. He's even, you know, got a bigger lead in Iowa and South Carolina. But you asked the primary voters if they think that Trump is inevitable. What did they have to say?
So it was really a split. It was really, people don't believe, obviously the Trump voters believe that Trump's election is inevitable, 48%. And, you know, the most of the other candidates say it's not inevitable, 44%. So what we're seeing is that, you know, it's not as pronounced as what you're seeing in some of these other polling indicators. And I think that speaks to some interesting tidbits, which is, 59% say their mind is made up, mostly Trump voters.
Right.
But another 39% say they could change. And so that opens the door for a potential primary challenger to Trump.
And just so for people who haven't seen our coverage at nhjournal.com, et cetera, it's Trump 49, Haley 19, DeSantis 10, Christie 6, Scott 4, Ramaswamy 4, and then Burgum and Pence at 1%. Should there be any surprise that the former vice president of the United States is at 1% in New Hampshire in your latest poll?
I think in his own mind, he sees himself a lot higher. But I think this is the wrong time, and it's probably time to rethink his strategy here. The way this race shapes up, I can't see a path for him. If you like Trump Pence, you're voting for Trump. Right. If you don't like Trump Pence, if you don't like Trump, you're not voting for Pence.
Right.
You're voting for somebody else. So I'm not sure. It's highly improbable at this point based on what we're seeing.
What do you make of the fact that national polls, and you've done some national polling in the primary as well, that they show Trump in the upper 50s to low 60s. In fact, the same 24-hour period that your poll came out, there were two new national polls that had Trump with more than 60% of the GOP primary votes. There are some people who say, if you look at the early states where they're really paying attention, Trump isn't doing as well, and that this reflects more of a mood than it does a voter, kind of thought process or decision. Is that a legitimate way to look at these numbers?
It absolutely is. But you have to give, the early states really carry disproportionate weight than the national polls do.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are impacted, despite what they say in polling, they are impacted by the results of the first four contests. So I take that with a grain of salt. I think the most recent uptick in Trump is because Ramaswamy is dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramaswamy voters, 40% in our poll, said their second choice was Trump.
Sure.
So he was dropping in New Hampshire. And clearly, if he's dropping in the national polls, then that might explain why he's going from 50 to mid 50s or 60.
So one of the conversations people are having is whether or not the Republican Party is simply a Trump party. And no matter how you shuffle the players on the deck, no matter where you put them, the captain behind the wheel of this ship is going to be Donald Trump. Does the data back that up? Is there data that raises questions about that thesis? What do you see?
I would be more inclined to agree with that, because New Hampshire, when you think about it, includes independents. A lot of states don't include independents.
Mm-hmm.
In Iowa, you have to be enrolled in the Republican
right.
Party to caucus. In Florida, you have to be a Republican. So, you're seeing a 30-point win in a state that allows live free or die independents in the Granite State who can vote and who are, independents in New Hampshire are not hardcore Republican voters. So I think, looking at all of the states, to your question, looking at all the states and all the contests, if someone can't win in New Hampshire that's not Trump, where else?
Right. And that's one of the things that I keep reminding people, and this is because I grew up in South Carolina, actually worked in politics in South Carolina. And so I understand that the premise of the South Carolina Saturday primary was to be the firewall before Super Tuesday. And it was actually, ironically, was put in place by kind of establishment Republicans who wanted to protect candidates like Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. But it's going to serve a similar role, which is a firewall to super, a kind of the gateway, the launch to Super Tuesday. And now it's in a state that's extremely pro-Trump. Set aside the elected officials, just the voters in South Carolina are like a very strong demographic match for Trump voters. And it's going to be tough, even with a level playing field, for someone other than Trump to win there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, South Carolina is home to Nikki Haley. If Haley is second in New Hampshire, which I believe she is, and, she's probably going to be at least second in South Carolina, that's two of the four where she's positioned as the alternative, but you still got to win. can't finish second everywhere, because
second place is first loser. That's how the game goes.
That's right.
Explosion of conversation about how polling is eternally broken. It just doesn't work anymore. I can't trust polls, et cetera, seems to have really died down. What do you think the status of the polling industry is today, David Paleologos?
I've never felt it's been broken. I've just felt all along that many organizations jumped in. And when you have, you know, if you only have 10 or 12 pollsters who are pretty much by the book and do good work, and then suddenly 35 more jump into the pool and they drive the averages either off kilter, up or down, we're all going to look bad. And I think people are sifting through. I would encourage people to go to suffolk.edu/SUPRC, which stands for Suffolk University Political Research Center. Right. We've posted our accuracy according to Real Clear Politics and 538.com. And to not just judge our polling, but everybody's polling. I don't think it's broken. And I think to your question, 2022 was a good year for pollsters all around, not just Suffolk. And, you know, I think there's renewed confidence that we're getting it right more times than we're not. No one's perfect. We have our clunkers like anybody else, but all in all, the good pollsters don't have motivations. We just want to be right.
Right. And that's a motivation. I like that motivation.
That's the only thing that matters to us. And we take it, the good pollsters take it to heart if they're not right. And they certainly do, you know, the forensics to figure out why.
Last question. On the one hand, you could argue this is the craziest presidential race, you know, in a long time, because you've got a guy who's, whatever, 812 years old, who has to have special stairs to use to get on his own plane, running against a guy who's in court every day because he's got four different court cases against him. And if you look at it that way, it's, seems pretty wild. How can either of these guys win, right? On the other side, you've got an incumbent Democrat who wants his party's nomination, and basically an incumbent, the former president, who wants his party's nomination, and that this is just as boring as you would expect it to be. Which race is this?
Well, this is why two-thirds of the population don't want either to run. They're sick of it. And this is why there's been so much talk about a third party candidate. Nobody likes to talk about third party campaigns, but you know, there's such a lane, the door is wide open for a third party candidate to emerge, which could really make pollsters' jobs that much more challenging. The fact of the matter is, the short answer to your question is, the system favors Biden and Trump based on whatever metric you look at. That is endorsements, early states, what states will have seated delegates, I guess it boils down to the power of the incumbency, right? I mean, you framed it as both being incumbents, and there is some power of that incumbency. And the only wild card right now is the economy. I mean, if the economy bounces back, Biden's got a shot, even with his age problems and his cognitive issues, to be reelected. But I'll tell you, the economy, we just did a poll a week ago with the Sawyer Business School on the economy, just the economy, not politics.
Right.
And a lot of people are hurting out there. And, you know, if the economy unravels next year and we're in a bad place with that, then Trump could win, or whoever the Republican nominee is.
The last question is about the third parties, because you talk to political pros and they just dismiss it. It's not serious. You know, no labels. Who's the nominee going to be? And the answer I give it, and you, as you know, Dave Playlux, because you were a listener of mine on the radio, I use very in-depth political jargon from the depths of academia. I say it's the poop taco versus crap sandwich conundrum, which is, if it is the case that negative partisanship is the most powerful force in politics today, and I think it is, and you offer people a poop taco or a crap sandwich, why wouldn't negative partisanship drive people towards any third alternative? In other words, instead of saying, well, who can beat Biden and Trump? Can Manchin do it? Can whatever, Sununu do it? My question is, as soon as you give people an alternative, you've got negative partisanship working for you, because you know they don't want the poop taco and the crap sandwich.
Yeah.
And I know that's a bit academic for you. I don't want to push you far, you know, into Aristotelian thinking, but what's your take on my theory?
So the thing is, you have to, I mean, when you're talking about breaking a glass ceiling, which is, can an independent win a national race, you really have to have someone who's exceptional, an exceptional figure that people feel comfortable with, because, you know, a lot of people are traditional even Democrats and Republicans. And like you said at the beginning of your question, people scoff at it. But the fact of the matter is that we've had instances, John Anderson, Ross Perot and others, Ralph Nader, of people who have run and people have chosen to vote for them in part because they didn't like the choices. I mean, the people were voting for Ross Perot because they didn't trust Bill Clinton and they couldn't stand Bush. And with John Anderson, they had it, you know, with in 1980, you know, when it was Ronald Reagan
and Carter.
So, I mean, you've got a situation where it's arguably much, much worse than 1980. Right. 1980. And, you know, in the other choices in 1992, it's arguably much worse right now. So, but you've got to fill it with somebody who can get on the ballots, because there are logistical challenges, which is why Robert Kennedy was talking and sort of flirting with being a libertarian. And
right.
I know he's got a big announcement coming up, but you know, if you just run as an independent, it's really hard to get on all states' ballots. I don't even think Jill Stein got on every ballot last time. And they're the Green Party. So, you know, you can form no labels, but you still got to have ballot access and you got to have infrastructure as well.
Well, but if you look at 19% of the popular vote for Ross Perot, who was not a spectacular candidate, and he was running against two candidates who were not terrible. You know, George H.W. Bush wasn't, you know, Donald Trump, and Bill Clinton wasn't Joe Biden. So I think the parameters have been moved because of the depth of unpopularity, rightly or wrongly, for the two incumbents. And I just think it's silly to dismiss the idea that if you give people an option, and you think the number thing, one thing they want to vote is to stop people, and that option can stop people, then why wouldn't they vote for that stop? The counter argument is they'll be so afraid that their vote might help Democrats or Republicans, depending on who they are, that they'll stick with their team. And so that's the real question.
That's right. But keep in mind also that the post-debate polling, when Perot first ran in 1992, two of the three debates, people said Perot won the debate.
Right.
Two out of three, and he still lost. He still didn't win any electoral votes. So even with that great, you know, debate performance, but I agree. I mean, there are a lot of people who vote third party. I've voted third party in my lifetime since I began voting. So, I mean, there are people who do vote third party for whatever reason. They either don't like the candidates or they like the third party candidate in this case. But, you know, you're right. Half the battle is won. People don't like the choices as they stand right today. So it's just filling that other half. That's the most important thing.
David Paley Logos, outstanding work. We have it linked at nhjournal.com. Thanks so much and keep up the great work at Suffolk University.
We'll be in touch. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to this edition of the New Hampshire Journal podcast. Please find us on Twitter, New Hamp Journal, on Facebook, NH Journal, and of course at nhjournal.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. I'm Michael Graham with Inside Sources. Thanks again for listening.